I object to all punishment whatsoever. Mm. I don't want to punish anybody. But there are an extraordinary number of people whom I want to kill. Not in any unkind or personal spirit, but it must be evident to all of you, you must all know half a dozen people at least, who are no use in this world, who are more trouble than they are worth. And I think it would be a good thing to make everybody come before a properly appointed board, just as he might come before the income tax commissioners, and say every 5 years or every 7 years, just put him there and say, sir or madam, now will you be kind enough to justify your existence? If you can't justify your existence, if you're not pulling your weight in the social boat, if you're not producing as much as you consume, or perhaps a little more, then clearly we cannot use the big organization of our society for the purpose of keeping you alive, because your life does not benefit us, and it can't be of very much use to you.
All right, everybody, that was the voice of George Bernard Shaw, the subject of today's lecture. He was recorded saying those things. I don't know if you could hear him or not. He was saying that while he rejects punishment, for instance, capital punishment, I believe the capital punishment was the context of his intervention there, whether or not capital punishment should be permissible. While he rejects capital punishment, that he doesn't believe in punishment for crime, being, as we will see, a progressive and free-thinking man, he nevertheless does believe that the state must, should, has the right to, would benefit from killing members of the population. Members of the population, he specifies, are not productive, are not justifying their existence. He imagines a world, a utopian future, in which a state board will be convened and citizens will have to report, he says, every 5 to 7 years to prove that they can justify their existence by being productive. He says that you must either add what you take to society, or you must add a little more. And if you don't do this, you are not a productive member of society. The resources of a large organized society should not go to your protection, your upkeep, your welfare. And in fact, you're no use to anyone. And he ends by saying, not even yourself. So that is George Bernard Shaw in 1931. Advocating for a policy of the state, culling the non-productive, which he doesn't define. An interesting rhetorical feature of his discourse there was that he does begin with a witty paradox. He says, there's no one I want to punish, but there's a great number of people I want to kill. And he says that in his wonderful Irish brogue. So that is where George Bernard Shaw ended up in his social and political thought in 1931. He was pretty old by that time, but he would live almost another 20 years. He's a very long-lived author. He is, in many ways, our first 20th century author, even though we are considering him in the light of a late Victorian, a fin de siècle writer, because he was born, as you'll see, in 1856, but he lived until 1950. So he overlaps these Victorian and modern periods. He is in many ways a typical Victorian. He is in many ways a typical modern. I would mostly not say he's a modernist, but we'll have to discuss that. But he's certainly a modern, that is, in the tradition of sociopolitical modernity, out of which something like a belief in the state's right and duty to manage the population like a biological organism and relative and periodically clear it out. That comes out of modernity. That's an Enlightenment idea. So he is, I would say, a modern, but maybe not a modernist. So that's our introduction to George Bernard Shaw. I was going to start with a quip, but I never should. And then I shouldn't guiltily tell you the quip. I was going to say George Bernard Shaw is recommending Canadian healthcare to you all. And so I expect this episode to be a success in Canada, or indeed Scotland, as I also learn. And he comes from Ireland, so I don't know what it is about the periphery of the British Empire and this attraction to this cult of the state and its right to kill the populace. But I shouldn't begin with such a quip. This is The Invisible College. This is my series of literature courses for paid subscribers. You can find everything for your Invisible College needs at granthotelabyss.substack.com. It is where you can find the slideshow corresponding to this and all other lectures. It is where, if you are listening to a free preview, you can offer a paid subscription to get access to the complete archives. It is where you can find my always free weekly newsletter on literature and culture, Weekly Readings, which drops every Sunday. And it is where you can access in a wide variety of formats, including links to purchase print copies on Amazon.com, my novel, recently published in book form, previously serialized on Substack, Major Arcana. And I would ask you to please read and purchase that. It is available in ebook format, in serialized format, in print book format, on Substack, and on Amazon. I am your host, John Pistelli. I am here to contribute this lecture on George Bernard Shaw. I welcome everybody to this lecture. I hope we can have fun dealing with some difficult subject matter, as you'll see, as we talk about George Bernard Shaw. In certain ways, he's among the most sheerly fun writers we're going to read, along with Oscar Wilde. Mostly a pleasure to read, mostly an entertaining writer, a thought-provoking writer, a writer that provokes thought but not through literary form, and therefore not in a way that strains our intelligence, but in a smooth, crowd-pleasing and entertaining form, as befits his status as comic playwright, celebrity comic playwright. That's on the one hand, among the most fun writers we're going to encounter. On the other hand, he might be among the most monstrous in terms of what he proposes. And I do believe, as you'll see, that what he proposes is all of a piece, that Shaw's thought, early and late, though it develops, though it undergoes what he would call creative evolution, nevertheless doesn't change as much as you might think from his feminist play, Mrs. Warren's Profession, to his at that time, he would have been flirting with both fascism and communism, with his fascist and communist call to eliminate the weak and the unworthy. We're going to see that that actually all goes together in ways that you might not expect. This is going to be a lecture about his thought, Mrs. Warren's Profession. I will have a number of things to say about a few passages, but it is not a play requiring close textual scrutiny necessarily. In some ways, it is a self-explanatory text, a didactic text. Shaw believed quite strongly in didactic art, art that preached a message, art that was indistinguishable from propaganda. So I'm mostly going to use Mrs. Warren's Profession as the occasion for more wide-ranging speculation on Shaw's thought. I will tell you about his, because we're reading something early, sort of, not early in his life. He was a late bloomer as a playwright, but early in his, what would eventually be his career. But I will take you through at least the next 30 years in his career and explain how he gets to "There's a lot of people I want to kill." This is called The Drama of Thought. This lecture is entitled The Drama of Thought. Another thing about Shaw is he's like Dickens, at least in my